Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Alyssa.
Hey, Sam.
Welcome back to season 4.
Is it season 4?
Yeah, because I said season 5 on the other. We filmed an episode already and I said season 5 and she was like, it's season 4.
Yeah. Welcome back to season 4.
Very exciting times.
It is exciting. Stuck at the office or traffic jam. Time to take it easy with Alyssa and Sam. Is that show you know? A pro. I can't,
no.
I just can't not. I don't know. I said in my video that I filmed the other day that like eye watering is like a personality trait now, and I have that personality trait. So, and I haven't had to wear like strip lashes in so long. So now I'm like,
now it's the stakes are much higher.
Yeah. Cause like I'm going to like pop a lash off.
Yeah. Oh God. Anyway. It's like my eyes like sting looking into your like watery eyes.
Oh, your makeup's really pretty today.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Anyway, let's get it together, Alyssa. Yeah, welcome back, you guys. We had, I would like to say a productive month off, but I don't know that that's the case. Well, you've been very productive. Your island is killing it.
Thank you. We should talk about Animal Crossing. And yes, I have been very productive in Animal Crossing.
How many, if you're comfortable sharing, how many hours have you logged on Animal Crossing?
The last time I checked, it was 110.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm at now.
How many? Okay, so 110. So that's 48 would be 2 days, 88. Hold on. I'm stupid.
Do you want me to just go 110 yeah. divided by 24?
I want to see how many full days you've spent on that.
Okay. So 4.5 days.
All right. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's not that crazy.
It's really not that crazy. But when you think about how many like waking hours there are, it's like yeah, that's
true. That's you a know. Lot. But yeah. Hey, are you happy?
Yeah, I think it's like kind of a motivating factor for me because I'll wake up in the morning and I'll be like, okay, I have to like do something so that yeah. I can like, you know, I've earned Animal Crossing. That's and then I feel good.
Yeah, that's what I had to do because I got it after Sam pressured me for like, I don't even know. She was like really on me about it. Sam's not usually that on me about things other than quitting my job. That was the other one. But she was on me about the Animal Crossing. And I finally got it. And then I quickly realized that I would have to get all of the shit I have to get done in the day before I pick up my Switch.
Yeah. But then it makes it like that much more like satisfying when you can yeah. like really like gear down and be like, I fucking deserve this, you know?
Yeah. I really hurt my wrist boxing though. And so like having to move that thing.
It's just kind of like you got to like invest your time.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Like, you got to prioritize your
physical exercise, Animal Crossing. I just don't know.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like it's just sort of like you either take it seriously or you don't.
Yeah.
You know,
clearly
know.
I'm not as, what is that called?
Dedicated?
My brain has shut off.
Dude, there's nothing to do or think about lately. So.
Yeah. The thinking, words are hard. Anyway, we wanted to come back and give you guys kind of an update of, you know, how we've been feeling, what we've been doing, what's going on in the world, that sort of thing. So that's today's episode is like a what's up episode.
Yeah. Keep it low key.
Yeah.
We wanted to give some updated COVID-19 stats. When we recorded our podcast talking about it, I think it was at 175,000 cases or around there. Mm. And now we're at 2.8 million confirmed cases. Today is April 26th while we're recording this. 193,000 deaths, 213 countries, areas, or territories with cases.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at now.
Yeah. It's hard because I feel like all you see online, obviously, because it's the I would argue the most significant thing going on in my life right now.
Modern history.
Yeah.
I would even go so far as to say.
Yeah. It's all you see online. And so it's kind of like, do we touch on it or do we create a space that like isn't surrounding it? But it's just, it's almost impossible for me not to talk about it because it literally is affecting everyone.
Yeah.
And it's been crazy because the confrontational side of me kind of like left me when I blossomed into this new like intentional human being.
And then really flourished. As COVID-19 spread, so did Alyssa's confrontational personality.
Oh, I just can't like stop myself basically. Like I'm not going out there and like picking fights, so to say, but even, well. When I see something, an injustice being done, I justify. Testify.
I step in.
But honestly, the biggest debates that I've gotten into are within like, not my immediate friend circle, but like friends of like greener pastures. That's not the right thing to say, but that's what came to my mind.
Okay.
But like people that I used to be friends with, like in high school and stuff like that. And it's just crazy to me because I guess like none of us will ever truly know what's going on in our governments or like whatever, unless we're in our government. Like that's because that's a big thing, a big conspiracy I feel is that people are saying that this was blown out of proportion by the media or is like a conspiracy within the government or it's not as big of a deal as people are making it seem. And, you know, even though I'm on the side of I do think it's an extremely big deal, I can entertain those thoughts and, you know, think about it on their side as well. Regardless, I mean, you're never really going to know. So what I go by is the facts that are being given to me by sources that I trust.
Yeah.
And like I said, in our COVID-19 podcast episode, I do trust the World Health Organization and I like to look to the CDC for information as well. And a lot of the things that people are saying that really like actually pisses me off is like people really have grabbed on to this it's not as bad as the flu thing. Yeah. And I don't understand why. I don't know I think it might have been that a member of government, I'm trying not to like make this a political thing.
It gets political. I mean, when you have someone like a significant world leader telling you to inject disinfectant into your body,
yeah,
it's just that it's hard not to make it a little bit political.
Yeah, true. That doctor actually came out and not defended but like elaborated on that a little bit as well.
What
saying that
to elaborate
well
on?
They were saying that he was like speaking out loud and ingesting new information on the go sort of thing.
Trump was,
yeah. That's what I read about it. And again, like within the media, it's hard to say like what's true and what's not. But yeah. I mean, I did watch that and I was like,
did you see? Oh, my God. Did you see the mayor of Las Vegas?
No.
Horrific. OK, so the mayor of Las Vegas was doing an interview with Anderson Cooper. And she wants to like open up all the casino floors and stuff like that and like have like the strip like basically like up and running.
Right, because her main, that's huge for their economy.
Oh, massive. And so he was saying like, do you honestly think that that's like responsible? Like, do you think that that's right for like all these people? And she was like, she was saying that she like basically offered up the city of Las Vegas as like a control group. And they were like, no, absolutely not. And she was like, I offered. And they said no. And he was like, you offered up your citizens as a control group? And she was like, no, don't take my words out of context. And he was like, what are you talking about? That's what you just said, that you offered them up as a control group.
What does that mean? Sorry, that
she was saying like, we'll be the control group against, let me just pull up the thing. How about that?
Okay.
So what she was saying is that she offered up the idea of Las Vegas workers becoming a control group in an experiment to determine the effectiveness of social distancing measures. And it's just like, okay, so you're putting your, like, everyone's lives on the line, basically, to be a control group. And then at one point, Anderson Cooper said, like, so are you going to be out there on the casino floors? And she was like, I have a family. That was her response.
Is that a quote?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes. And like, she was like, first of all, I have a family. And he was like, what the fuck? Like, what are you talking about? Like, it was an abysmal, abysmal like show of how little. And he was like saying like, okay, so your buddies that like own these casinos, like that, like that's basically who you're caping for pretty much. And she was like, I don't own a casino. And then at one point he was like, how are you going to make sure that you know, people are going to be properly like social distancing? Like, how are you possibly going to make that.
Yeah, police that. Yeah.
Well, people are playing blackjack and shit like that and whatever. Yeah. Like, how far could they possibly be from this dealer?
And not even to mention the fact that, like, slot machines and stuff like that, or, like, cards. Like, how are you going to sanitize them? Yeah. Anyway.
Well, and she was like, that's not up to me to figure out. I don't own a casino. That's up to them. And it's just like, okay, so you're not taking any responsibility or accountability here whatsoever. And you're just completely fine with, like, the potential of all these people dying in the name of science to make sure that, does social distancing work? Let's find out.
Like, but we're already seeing that because we flattened the curve here in BC.
Yeah. And Saskatchewan's opening back up.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It sounds like they're doing it, like, gradually. So they're, like, people are allowed to go back to, like dentists and chiropractors and shit like that. And then I think they're going to kind of go from there.
Wow.
I know.
That's kind of scary to me.
It's scary to me,
too. I just don't feel like we're ready.
I don't feel like we are either. Like, I almost feel like, I don't know. I'm obviously not Trudeau.
Yeah.
But, like, and I don't have all of the facts. But to me, it almost seems like, why wouldn't we just wait until the country as a whole is, you know, in a good place? Because, like, Quebec is still having a really hard time. Ontario's still having a really hard time.
Yeah.
So, like, why wouldn't we kind of wait until, like, everybody? Because we don't know who's traveling from province to province.
Well, that's what I was just going to say, is the provincial borders aren't closed.
No.
So.
And it's like, if our borders are closed anyways from, like, other countries, then it's like, why wouldn't we, like, as a country try and, like, heal and make sure that we're, like, all in a good place before we start, like, popping back open in different areas? Because it's my concern is that, like, then this was all for naught. Like, if there was a second wave because, like, Saskatchewan opened too early, then this would have all been, like, basically a waste of time.
Right.
And we're all, like everyone's bleeding over this, you know what I mean? And some people more than others. Like, there's people losing jobs and, you know, like, really struggling to pay bills. And there's businesses, like, just being so heavily affected by this. So it's, like, that's in vain if we tell everyone to go back too early and then have to do it all over again and, like, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. When I just feel like it would probably be, like, a shorter timeline if we just stuck it out throughout this, like, first wave.
Yeah. And again, like, we aren't nearly as affected as a lot of other people because we don't have dependents.
Yeah.
You know, we don't own a business. Like, well, you know what I mean? Like, we don't own a business that has overhead and stuff like that. But I don't really feel like anybody is unaffected. Like, we have been affected, and I actually, like, applied for a job online and stuff like that. So to make sure, because everything is so unpredictable right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is extremely hard, and being in your house and stuff like that and creating this new normal for yourself it's extremely taxing on your mental health, and a lot of people extremely financially taxing. But like you said, like, I think the thing is like, none of us want this.
No,
you know, like, even the people who are advocating for it, like myself, like, we think that there's a benefit to it. I don't want it. I don't want, you know, my gym
but
to be closed
but that's
and to
exactly
be supporting
it.
Local businesses and stuff.
And, like, because you don't want it, then, like, let's just, like, stick it out, get it over with so that we don't have to do this all over again. Because if there is, like, a second outbreak, I could see it being that we're in for even longer.
Yeah.
So I'd rather just, like, do it right the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
But.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know.
That does scare me. Do you know what's interesting is how quickly and, like, severely New Zealand responded.
Oh, really? What was their kind of role?
I didn't research it enough. That just came to my mind, like, right off the hop. But I was reading that some of these countries, like, I know that Australia right now, you're not allowed to leave for anything that's not essential. And you can get fined.
They kind of had a delayed response, didn't they, in Australia?
Australia, I'm unsure. Maybe. But I know that right now, that's what's going on. And they're really affected because of their ties to China. Like, a lot of their stuff comes from China. So they were really affected financially as well.
I mean, so much of the supply chain comes from China.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Speaking of mental health, how do you feel like your mental health is doing through all of this, personally?
I thought that I was doing okay, to be honest. Like, but I think that that's just me. I'm like,
ain't that always the way? I thought I was great.
But I, you know, it just, your body tells you differently. So my period was 7 days late, which is not the norm. And Sam and I are synced up. So when she got hers and I didn't get mine, I was like, excuse me, going on. And so that kind of was like a big red flag for me that my anxiety is like a lot higher than I thought it was. And I was getting like chest pains again and stuff like that, and like little heart palpitations. And I was like, oh, this is weird. But I was like, maybe I'm just like drinking too much coffee or whatever. But those are like direct signs of my anxiety. Like how my anxiety shows up is like a like fast beating heart. Like maybe palpitations isn't the right word to use, but like irregular heartbeat is what I should say. So yeah, I think that my anxiety is like pretty high. My cortisol levels are probably through the roof. But I don't know, like my productivity is pretty low. Like I don't feel comfortable in front of, like the podcast is okay for some reason, but maybe it's because we're together, but like I don't feel comfortable filming my own videos right now. Like I feel like I'm tripping over my words. Like I'm struggling to come up with like a like full view of the video and stuff like that. Like I come up here and I just like sit at my computer and I'm like, can I edit though? Like I don't know. But I signed up for an online like fitness program to keep me accountable for that, because that is something that like really helps me mentally. Like when after I work out, like I immediately feel more alive and like energized and stuff like that. Like it really helps me like cope. So that's been helping a lot. So I'm trying to like get back into the swing of things, but I didn't even realize how much it affected me until like probably like this last 7 days or so. Yeah. How about you?
I feel similarly like unmotivated. I think in the beginning for me, when this all started, it was almost more like everything felt inappropriate. Mm-hmm. Like it felt inappropriate when like people are in the midst of like losing their jobs and like all this uncertainty and, you know, like some different countries' responses financially to like how they're like supporting their citizens and stuff. It felt like just not appropriate to get on and be like, so anyways guys, Sephora VIB sale, you know, like that just felt really like I don't know, like and so to me it was almost like I just would rather not. Mm-hmm. Because nothing feels appropriate and nothing feels like the right thing to say. And then eventually it just kind of got to the point where I was seeing a lot of people tweeting at like myself and other content creators being like, we just want to see normal content, like we don't want to like talk about it, we just want to see normal stuff. But for me, it was almost like, this is so heavy that, like, I feel like I need to just call it out. Like, I need to just do a video talking about it so we can be like, okay, yeah, like, this is what's going on, so I can, like, get it off my chest and then, like, move on with my life kind of thing. And I get that way about, like, certain things that are going on for me personally. And I'm just like, I just need to fucking, like, tell people, like, what's up. Mm-hmm. And so I did a video talking about, like, how, like things that I've learned in therapy that I feel like could, like, help people potentially through this. And I felt a lot better after I did that. Like I felt like, okay, I feel like I've said what I need to say and I've gotten it out there kind of thing. And I feel like I've like said my piece on it and now I can kind of like move on doing whatever. So I'm trying to get back into the motivation swing of things. Yeah. But other than that, I'm not like a huge anxiety ridden person, but I fucking am now.
Yeah.
Like going to the grocery store is the worst fucking experience of my life. Like every single time I go to the grocery store, I come home and I'm like so anxious and like I feel physically ill for like an hour afterwards.
Yeah.
It's just not, I don't know. Like it's just, it's weird. Like it kind of feels like when I'm in my house, especially because I've been working from home for so long, it doesn't feel that out of the norm. Like it's like not this huge like lifestyle change where like I'm going from working in an office with a bunch of people to like at home isolated. Like this is what my lifestyle typically looks like. But when I go out of the house and like see what it actually looks like out there, I'm like, oh, that this is like very real.
Yeah.
And I think for me, like that's like so unsettling that it's just like I'd rather almost not.
Yeah.
Ever again.
Yeah. I get really bad anxiety going to the grocery store as well, mostly because I'm so scared to get it.
Yeah.
Because I'm so worried about the fact that I have asthma and that I have a poor immune system and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that makes me feel really anxious and I don't enjoy grocery shopping anymore. I used to love grocery shopping.
I know. I was just saying, I was on a live the other day and I was like, I used to like leisurely grocery shop. And like now I'm like, I'm just like picking like random shit off the shelf because I'm like so nervous.
Yeah. And I just feel like dirty when I get home.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like trying to like make sure that I'm scrubbing and like, you know what I mean? Like I'm concerned basically. Well,
and it also feels like so like obsolete in a way, because it's like, okay, I get home, I wash my hands, but then I'm touching those same groceries that I washed my hands about. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to wash my groceries. Like some people have been like washing like the outside of their cereal boxes and shit. Yeah. But like, you know, it's like, I just feel like it just feels so obsolete. Like obviously it's not, like everyone should be washing their hands, but I don't know. Yeah. It's like hard to, everything just feels like tainted.
For not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, is like, I'm just trying to do everything I can to reduce risk. Mm-hmm. Like that's the thing for me, even with my veggies and stuff like that, because I am, like so worried about it. I honestly won't eat my veggies until like 48 hours has passed, if I can like help it. Yeah. Just, I don't know. Just, and I'm not like trying to be like a, you know, fear monger or whatever, but it's just what makes me feel comfortable, with that. And I don't know. Yeah. It just, it makes me anxious leaving. And like, even I had to go and get a prescription the other day, and they wouldn't refill my birth control because they're in Canada anyway. They're only giving you 30 days of each medication. And because I still have like 2 weeks of my current package, they won't, or I can't remember. But anyway, they said I had to wait another 15 days before I could get my birth control. And I was just like, but now, like, because I have such bad anxiety, like even going in general, like I had to like work myself up to go to the pharmacy. Now I have to come back again. And like, I was able to fill a prescription that day, a different one, but now I have to go back again to get my other one. And I'm just like, and like, I understand where they're coming from because of what we saw specifically with toilet paper, people like
stockpiling.
And so potentially what people could have been doing is like stockpiling other meds, and then eventually would have created a shortage. In the notice that they like gave me or whatever, they said that there isn't currently like worry of a shortage, but is that because they put this into place early on? Who knows? But it definitely like sucked.
Well, and I think that like, to me, I feel like the same way that our grocery stores are implementing, like most of our grocery stores around here are like two per whatever item. Mm-hmm. So like, you can only get like two things of chicken, like whatever. So you can only get two of each thing. And like, I think it should just be similar with medication. Like, no, you can't come in and buy like a year and a half's worth of birth control, but like, no, it's like, it's pretty standard to buy like 3 months worth. Yeah. I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The thing that I was talking to my grandma about as well is there's like a dispensing fee for pharmacies as well. And there's a lot of people that can't afford those dispensing fees, because if you get like a larger chunk of your medication, like medication that's like, you can get, you know what I mean? It's not like something where you're only allowed so many, normally in like a normal circumstance. But you have to pay the dispensing fee each time. And so people, you know, there's people who can't afford, well, I don't want to pay that anyway, but like there are people who like, it would actually like seriously affect. And I was thinking too, like, not to mention seniors or like just anybody without family members to like help them out in going to get these medications as well. And like, you know, I think that birth control is an extremely important medication, and I think that it's our right to have it. But I was even going like a step further and thinking about like literal life-saving medications, like puffers and like heart medications and, you know, insulin perhaps and stuff like that. And I know that they said that they would make
exceptions.
Yes, thank you. Exceptions. But they said in very rare circumstances. And so I'm like, that's just, I don't know. Ugh. It's just so hard to like know what's right and not. Like, obviously we're not experiencing a drug shortage, so great. But definitely like doesn't negate the fact that there are people suffering from that as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's the thing. Like, there's just so much like talk about like what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing and whatever. And obviously like a lot of people are really concerned about kind of like the state of the economy and where we'll be after this, because all these governments are like, you know, just like funding so much stuff right now. But I don't know. Like, I just think that like, we're obviously trying to navigate something that no one's dealt with before in like our lifetimes. Everyone's just trying to do the best they can, hopefully. and I just think like with the economy stuff, it's like, I understand. And like, obviously this is like very like reductive and like simplifying it a lot, but it's just kind of like, if we all die, there will be no economy anyways. Like, right. It's just sort of like, it's just what needs to be done right now. So we know that the economy ebbs and flows anyways. Obviously, this is a very, like,
yeah,
this is an ebb.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I just think, like, what else can be done? But I do, maybe you know about this more, about this more than I do. Why are they just not, like, ceasing payments on everything? You know what I mean?
So I'm not great with economics, but my understanding from history is banks were closing back, like, when was this? Was this in the 30s? I can't remember. But if eventually, like, if you overlend, mm-hmm. and nobody's paying back into it, there would be nothing for you to pull from. So say like our banks are extremely, like, well, like, supported. So I'm not super concerned about, like, a bank crash. But think about if everybody, like, pulled out all their money or, like, wasn't paying their loans or whatever, the banks would overlend and then they would have no money. Say you wanted to pull out, like, $1 million of your dollars or something like that to buy something. Where would it come from? They wouldn't have it.
Okay. This is, like, coming together in my mind,
like,
now.
Yeah, because, like,
because, like, you still would be spending money regardless is what you mean.
Yeah, like, because when you put money into the bank, it's now just, like, a number. And then your bank, like, lends.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, this is the number that we owe you, basically.
Yeah.
And so if they lose all that money because nobody's, like, bringing anything in and then other people are pulling it out, it's like, well, where's the money going to come from?
Got it.
Again, I'm not. But I remember learning something about that in grade 11 history where, like, banks were overlending or people were able to buy, damn, I wish I paid more attention. People were able to buy.
Would it really come in handy a decade later?
Yeah, people were allowed to buy houses with, like, a very low down payment or something like that. And then everything was getting, like, repoed and shit like that. And then, like, banks were, like, falling. And I mean, I don't think we're there.
Yeah.
Not to, like, scare anybody, but I feel like that might be why, because then all of those companies would then cease to exist if, like, nobody was paying it back and then they owed money to other people and stuff like that. And the thing with
so it's not the best idea, and I shouldn't pitch it to Trudeau.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a sit down with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was gonna call him later,
but yeah, it's fine.
Just a moment to thank today's first sponsor, which is Skillshare.
My main Skillshare. I'm still loving on them. For those of you who don't know, which, like, if you listen to our podcast, how do you not? Because I'm literally talking about Skillshare constantly on my Instagram as well. Skillshare is an online learning community with thousands and thousands of classes that you can take, everything from productivity to how to take Instagram photos to Spanish to American Sign Language. There's so many classes that you can take. And what I really love about Skillshare is, like, you can pick it up, put it down at your own pace. You can go as fast as you want. You can even, like, speed it up. Like, when I was learning ASL, because I knew more ASL than, like, the class that I started with, since I wanted to brush up, I put it at 2x speed so that I could do it, like,
give it to me 2x, Skillshare.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that option, though, because, like, some people really like to soak in information and others kind of like to, like, really have it, like, blast at them. You know what I mean? I think that's such a cool feature.
Yeah. What have you been taking lately? Okay. What's on your agenda?
Okay, so I have actually been taking Spanish. For all of those who have been really holding me accountable just for
sticking
Spanish.
Through with it.
Okay, let me say something. Well, now I feel like I'm on the spot. I put myself on the spot.
How do you say Skillshare is a proud sponsor of Approachable in Spanish?
Okay, Sam, I'm on intro, okay?
Is that not the first thing that they reference?
It should be.
Yeah.
I can say, tú tienes un carro. That means you have a car.
I sure do.
I'm so sorry for butchering that sentence. But it's, hey, I'm getting better. I can say more than hola.
How often would you need to use that sentence? Sir, you have a car.
Sam, it's the building blocks of me learning this language, okay? I can also say, like, you have a son, you have a daughter, which make come in handy. I don't know, man. Also, I can,
when you're introducing someone to their long lost son or daughter.
Yeah, sure. I can name what a skirt is. Well, now I'm questioning what that is. Is it falda? I think so. But un ropa is clothes.
I love it.
No, una ropa. For fuck's sake. I'm working on it, you guys. Anyway, so I am taking Spanish. But something that I wanted to add to my little Skillshare repertoire is this Productivity Masterclass. It's by Thomas Frank, and it's called Productivity Masterclass, Create a Custom System That Works. I just feel like my productivity is at an all-time low. I can't get like motivated to do things, and I know what I need to do, and I'm not like actually that anxiety ridden, and I'm like not in like a low point. I'm just kind of like sitting there blah, and I think it's because I'm not like creating a plan. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not using my day planner. I'm not like helping myself in any way, and I just feel like this like masterclass situation might give me points and like might reinvigorate my like spice for life right now.
Really asking a lot of this this class.
I don't think I've ever said spice for life before, but like that.
But that's where we're at, folks.
Yeah.
So if you guys would like to try out Skillshare, you can go to skillshare.com/approachable and you can get 2 free months of a premium membership.
It astonishes me every time. You get 2 months of a premium membership, which means that you can take like as many classes as you want. Like if you just wanted to like load up on the info for 2 months, you could do so for free.
So do it.
By going to skillshare.com/approachable. Thank you so much, Skillshare, for sponsoring this episode of the podcast, and we love you. Another big thank you to Framebridge for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. So Framebridge is a really cool website where you can upload everything from original artwork, photos, posters, whatever you want. You upload it to the website. You can choose from a ton of different frames starting from $39, which honestly, when I started framing stuff,
I know, it's insane.
I was like, this is crazy. Like, it's so expensive, especially for custom frames, for custom sizes, especially if you're making like, you know, custom, how many times can I say custom, but like custom artwork, it's hard to find frames that fit that. So it's really cool that they have frames starting at $39, and you can see your artwork in those frames before you even make the order. The other really cool thing about Framebridge as well is all shipping is free.
That is like nonsensical to me in my mind. Truly, shipping for free, what a rarity in my life.
I know. I actually recently made a Mother's Day video where I did like a bunch of different ways that we can celebrate our moms this year. And one of them, like I'm telling you as if you didn't actually create the original artwork, one of them was to like draw a picture for the more like, you know, painter creative art type. Paint a picture or draw a picture for your mom and then frame it. And I think that a really good way to get that to your family right now is sending it out to Framebridge, so that they can send it like straight to your parents.
All of our listeners will get 15% off their first order at framebridge.com when they use the code approachable.
That's 15% off your first order at framebridge.com when you use promo code approachable.
Thanks so much, Framebridge.
But I actually was trying to learn more about like inflation and like the economy and stuff like that, because I really struggled with the idea of inflation even before this. Like, I didn't understand it, but basically what I was learning was that the economy like works on a flow, and if you stop purchasing things, the money stops flowing, and so it's like it needs to go like this, but if you're then hoarding your money, nothing's being like purchased, and then that's when the economy like
capitalism
goes to shit. Anyway, for anybody who actually studied economics, I'm so sorry for that entire segment.
They're like, oh.
Yeah, I know there's gonna be people in the comments that are like, great try, Alyssa, but there's actually, and I appreciate that, please do, I'm fully admitting that I know zero about economy.
And she knows far more than I do, because I'm like, why don't we just shut it down? Let's just stop everything.
Yeah.
It sounded like a viable.
Yeah. Don't know if that's true or not. But anyway, I'm from what I was like trying to read, that's what made sense to me. Anyway.
Yeah.
But I do know that like the people that like, there's quite a few landlords who are like helping with like reducing rent, and in Canada there's
rent relief
and stuff like that. And I don't know, not to make this political, but I do feel like Canada like had a good response for their citizens.
Oh, I think it's fantastic. I just feel like it always needs to be said that there's obviously like areas of Canada that are forever underserviced, and our Indigenous people is like just a gigantic chunk of that.
Yeah.
So I'm you know, I'm sure that they continue to be underserviced in this circumstance. But I feel like, generally speaking, the response has been fantastic. Like, Trudeau does, for those of you guys that don't know, because you don't watch Canadian politics, because it's very boring, Trudeau does an address every single morning throughout the week. So then he kind of tells us, like, where we're at. He answers questions. He talks about any kind of new, like, relief that they have. And so almost every single day, he's come out with a new, like, something more that they're doing, something more that they're offering, whatever kind of thing. And even things like, I mean, it might seem so trivial to some people, but to me, I respected this so much, because at one point he came forward with, I want to say it was $500 million.
I don't know if it was quite that
for
much.
For art. Hold on, let me look it up really quickly.
50 million sounds more.
No, reason. 500 million.
For arts?
500 million to arts, culture, and sports sectors.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense if it's...
Yeah. Yeah. But I just thought that was interesting that he did that at all.
Yeah.
Because, like, I could very easily see how people would be like, of all the things to put money towards, like, why is it this? But it's just like, you know, like, these... All of these people that, like, make up Canada is what makes up Canada.
Right.
And so all of these people contribute to, you know, our society and our culture and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, they don't deserve to be left in the dust just because they're doing something that's, like, not as traditional, or it's not something that's seen as, like, one of our major exports, like oil and stuff like that. That isn't the only industry that exists in Canada.
Right.
And so I thought that that was just interesting, because it's like, you know, that, to me, that was, like, ballsy. Like, that was ballsy to be like, yeah, no, this is important as well.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I feel like the response has been, I've been, like, very impressed.
That kind of pisses me off, though, because how much did he allocate for Indigenous people? Wasn't it only, like, $5 million, though?
I'm pretty sure from the, that was very early in the beginning, but I'm not sure if it's changed. Let me just quickly look it up.
Not that I feel like the arts and sports and stuff don't deserve that, but if that's such, like, a big gap,
mm-hmm.
that would, like.
Okay, so, so March 18th, this is from, over 300 million earmarked for Indigenous communities as Justin Trudeau unveils COVID-19 relief measures.
Okay.
So yeah, that was when he unveiled $82 billion response package. Of that, $305 million was for Indigenous communities. And then just now, April 22nd, he announced $75 million more in pandemic aid for Indigenous students.
Okay.
And then 6 days ago, it says promises relief for Indigenous small business, but I don't know that he's actually allocated that. Okay. So he says he promises up to $306.8 million in funding for small and medium-sized Indigenous businesses. At his daily briefing on Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It is, like, hard. I feel like if ever you're going to get into an argument with somebody, it's about this shit.
What?
Like, about what's going on now is, like...
Oh, yeah.
Like, even...
Do you want to talk about some of those arguments?
Oh, gosh. Maybe. I don't know. I think that it's just hard because you come to realize how differently people think to you.
Hmm.
And I feel like there's people who look at the news and look at things and then dig deeper to, like, find, like, facts, and then can kind of, like, form their own opinion through taking in other forms of media. So this is something that I came to realize about Facebook. Okay, just bear with me. So
this is all going to come together.
Yeah, it is. It will. So I deleted my Facebook, but what I've kind of realized is with Facebook, from what I understand, you have your friends and then you see what your friends are posting. So say you created your Facebook in your hometown. So now all of your friends are, like, from your hometown when you were, like, I don't know, 15, 16, 17. So you're ingesting information from those people from that time.
Yeah.
And you can you could have added other people and stuff like that. But generally speaking, they're going to have similar thought patterns as you because you connect with them, like, you know, like-minded people.
Well, and you're from the same area. You're experiencing a lot of the same things.
Exactly. Like... Yeah. Whereas I feel like places like Reddit, which can be a brutal place for sure. But what I like about Reddit, about, like, the popular page, is that a lot of what I see is not generally, like, what my friends would be posting or anything like that. And so I'm able to ingest information that I might not have otherwise ingested, right? Like, it's not curated for me based on, like, my political opinions or whatever. It's, like, a gathering of all of these political opinions from other people, especially in the comments and stuff. And I feel like Reddit is pretty good, not sponsored by Reddit, but I feel like Reddit is pretty good about like sourcing their, citing their facts, because people will tear them apart in the comments if they don't cite their facts. And then if that source is incorrect, the comment next is like, this is actually incorrect.
Yeah.
Whereas on Facebook, it's like, one of your friends can post a meme, a political meme, and then everybody is like chiming in on it being like, yeah, exactly. And then there might be like one person who's like, well, I don't think that way. But it's like, basically it goes unsighted and like unchecked, basically, right? It's just like, and then you can scroll past it so fast, and now that becomes true in your mind because you're ingesting that information. And so what I think is really dangerous about that is that you're not, if you don't have an inquisitive mind already to be like, I should check into that instead of just being like, oh yeah, like that looks like it's bullshit. Like if you just scroll past a headline of say Trump saying that you should inject disinfectant, and then you're already somebody who doesn't trust the media, you're like, oh, there goes the media again trying to like hate on Trump, but you didn't actually watch the clip or anything like that. Whereas I feel like platforms like Reddit, they make you more inquisitive, and they kind of teach you almost how to like cite your sources and stuff, because you can't get away with it without basically. So anyway, that was my long-winded way of kind of saying I think that it's interesting seeing people with different types of thought patterns and ways of like ingesting information, because I don't think that I'm like the end-all be-all. I don't think I know everything, but I don't mind changing my opinion, which is not really opinion because it's like based on fact. It's still my opinion though, but like I don't mind like changing my route of information if I feel like it has come from a source. And I think that, you know, with a developing situation like this, you know, they were saying like, don't take Advil, and then they're like saying take Advil. So obviously my facts on it are going to change, but it's interesting being around people who won't change even when like shown the facts basically, and they keep going back to things, and you have to, you know, bring up other facts, and you're like, okay, you're comparing this to SARS, which is like, it's not even on the same freaking like scope. Yeah. You can't really compare those two, both coronaviruses. And that's the other thing, is that this was labeled the coronavirus, which is obviously reductive because it is a coronavirus, but SARS is a coronavirus. The influenza is a coronavirus.
I think it just became like such a like colloquially known term for it.
But that again. And you know, SARS though, extremely deadly, was nowhere on the scale of infection here as well, and we didn't see the numbers. And you know, people saying like the numbers aren't there, well then you're not looking for them.
Well, and frankly, also like, I mean, there's so many people arguing that like the numbers aren't there because like we haven't even done enough testing and stuff like that. And it's like, but if that's what you're arguing, then what you're essentially saying is that the numbers are actually higher than what we're projecting.
Yeah.
So like you're still arguing against yourself. But yeah, I do think that it's like, it's always kind of unsettling in like things like this where, you know, like obviously this is very polarizing for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It is kind of unsettling sometimes to be like, holy fuck, like some of the people I surround myself with feel and think very differently than I do. Yeah. And like I didn't realize until like this moment how like fundamentally different we really are. And like it is kind of like it's like very like upsetting. And I think that already, you know, we're all in such like an uncomfortable space. It's all really like, we don't know what's going on, we're all nervous, it's all like we're all very unsure. And then on top of that, it's like I think that a lot of people are really you know, coming to find out that some people in their circle aren't really who they thought they were.
Yeah.
And that's scary for people.
Yeah. And obviously like we don't want to like start a debate in the comments or whatever, because there are things that people who think very differently than me have brought up that I'm like, okay, I see your point there.
Yeah.
Specifically, one is with the mortality rate. The thing that they were saying about testing is that if we were testing everyone who even possibly had it, because obviously they're allocating the tests at like on a triage basis, right? So like who is in the most dire, right? Like if you just have symptoms, they want you to stay home sort of thing. At least that was the last thing that I saw, unless you like have trouble breathing and stuff, but they're telling you to like isolate. They were saying if they tested everybody across the board, the mortality rate would be lower, which probably is true because there would be more people recovering than dying. But regardless, the amount of people who have died doesn't change. And to me, that's what's important is, yeah, like the actual people that we're losing. Another thing was people were saying that they were lumping COVID-19 in together with pneumonia. And I don't know if that's true because I'm not a healthcare professional and I don't know. But I could see how that is the case. But also that kind of makes sense to me because if COVID causes pneumonia and they die from it, it's like, well, is it pneumonia? Yes, but it's pneumonia caused by,
well, it was aggravated by that thing. And so even people that are saying like, well, they actually died because they had, you know, underlying whatever condition, and it's like, right, but they were alive until they had, right, COVID, and then that obviously aggravated those things and then led to like death, right. So I agree with you on that. Like I think that it makes perfect sense to have those deaths be included because,
right,
to me that is like attributed to,
right,
that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think the one thing for me like that I struggle to but try to do is that like I try to always remember like where, like why it's easier for me to like feel the way that I do based on like what my privileges are, like what my, right, lifestyle is, all that kind of stuff. So obviously, yeah, like it's easy for me to say like that I think that we should all stay in lockdown because like I'm still like comfortable financially and like I work from home, so it doesn't really impact me in that way. Right. And, you know, like I don't have dependents. I don't have like a family that I'm caring for and all that kind of stuff. So it's a lot easier for me to kind of like sit here and say like, yeah, we should all just be in lockdown, guys. Like when, you know, there's people that are really, really struggling and the only way that they are able to like help themselves is through working.
Right.
And so like you said earlier, like I just think it is hard to know what the right thing is. And mm-hmm. even a lot of people have been bringing up, you know, how different corporations have been like letting go of employees and the way they've been going about that and stuff like that. And one thing that was like pretty like highly publicized within the beauty community was how Sephora was letting go of employees.
Oh, wow.
So they, in the States specifically, they had a like Zoom call, I'm pretty sure, with like a lot of their, I think it was like their on-call and seasonal staff, if I recall. And they just like let them go over this Zoom meeting and no one could like ask questions. Like it was just kind of like, bye, see you later. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And people were like really, really upset about it. And then all these people were saying that like boycott Sephora. But it's like, but is that the right response? Because like ultimately they're getting let go for a reason. Mm-hmm. They weren't let go before this. They're let go now. So what took place that like required for Sephora to be letting these employees go? And like, it's just like loss of income and like the loss of like ability to be sustaining the same amount of sales that they had before this happened. So it's like, if we boycott Sephora, then that's like, simply put, it's just going to result in more people losing jobs.
Right.
And like a lot of people have been like, yeah, but CEO should be, you know, whatever. CEOs should do a lot of things that they don't do because they're assholes.
Yeah. And didn't do it in the first place. So
yeah. And like, ultimately it's just like, you know, I hate to generalize, but like most CEOs are in the position that they're in because they're not fucking afraid to step on toes.
Yeah.
And they're not, they're not like so morally just that they, you know, don't see it as appropriate to make the amount that they make, you know? So I don't know that we can rely on like one person, like letting go of their salary rather than, you know, like continuing to stimulate the economy, because that is just like the way that our society is set up. So mm-hmm. it's hard with that because it's like, no, like you don't want to support these companies that go about things the wrong way. But at the same time, it's like, but that's so many more jobs that are like at a potential to be lost because we're not wanting to support these companies.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like a vicious cycle.
Yeah. It's hard because I've heard of like much smaller companies notifying their employees in other ways that I think are just like so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that was my immediate thing too, is I'm like, I don't want to support that company anymore. Like that makes me really angry. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, yeah, I see what you're saying is like, if we're not supporting, you know, there's real humans behind.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, it's so easy to look at a company like Sephora that just is like seen as this like giant in the industry and be like, well, those fucking guys. And it's like, yeah, but then there's literal thousands of like little guys that are holding this up. And so, you know, is it wrong or right? Yeah, like maybe not like the best way that any of these companies are set up, but like it just is what it is. And so, you know, I want to be able to continue to support those people. And a lot of people have asked me as well, like, how I feel about supporting Amazon during this time, because it's like those are all people that are also having to go to work and potentially getting sick just to like keep that going. But it's like, it's the same thing. Like, it's just so hard because it's like, no, I don't want people having to go to work and get sick. But at the same time, like, I also do want people to be able to like live their lives and like get out of this on the other side. It's just, what is the right thing to do? Like, is there an answer to that? I don't know.
Yeah, I think moreover with Amazon specifically, which like, I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't shop on Amazon. I do. But I think the specific thing with them is that their working conditions are like so horrific, and like what they expect of their employees.
And they've been that, you know, like that. I don't know that that, and I haven't like read anything about whether or not it's changed, but
right. It
has been that way. And so, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's just like of all the times to like speculate and be like upset about like how companies are run, it's like, to be honest, like these companies have always been run this way.
Yeah.
As horrific as it is, it's just like so much more highly publicized now because it's happening on such a larger scale. But a lot of these companies just are fucking pieces of shit. And it's just, to me, it's just kind of like, what's the bottom line? And I feel like it is these like workers, like they are the bottom line of like who is getting impacted the most. Because even if like Sephora went under, would it be the CEO paying for it? No.
Yeah.
Like, he would probably still walk away like a multi-millionaire, whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I think something that is positive about like social pressure, not like boycotting, but like social pressure, is that I am seeing a lot of companies who did do what I deem to be the right thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they would have made those decisions unless it was from a PR standpoint.
Yeah,
I really
for sure.
don't. Because oftentimes it's not the like,
it's about the negative impact.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
because they're like so morally sound.
Yeah. I was going to say it's not like the best financial choice for them, but it is in the long run because mm-hmm. they know. So I don't know. Is social pressure hard when it like happens to me? Sure. But I
don't like it.
No. But I do think that it like makes us better people, because oftentimes what is being like socially pressured is like what I deem to be the right thing.
Oh, for sure.
And so there were companies who were like paying their workers. Like, I know a lot of restaurant companies that were paying their workers throughout like the last week or 2 weeks or whatever that they were supposed to be working, and then laid them off so that they could apply for EI, and they made it a really simplified process for them. They like sent them the links and everything like that. And
yeah.
So I do see like those kind of positives. But yeah, I don't know. Boycotting's a hard one for me. I don't know.
It's a hard one for me too, because I feel like I just feel like there's usually so much more to it than that. Mm-hmm. And even like you just pointed out with like having to lay off employees for them to be eligible for EI.
Yeah.
It's like that's a huge one. And like, unfortunately, yeah. like if you just kind of kept them on the line, then like they couldn't apply for EI and then they also wouldn't be working.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's the thing is like they could schedule you for like a couple of shifts where you wouldn't be making like say like servers and stuff like that. Right. Like they like packing up takeout for like $12 an hour or whatever minimum wage is here. It's like that's a lot different.
Yeah.
Than, you know, receiving EI. And again, EI is not going to be the same as what your income normally would be. But if it's more than, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's like whatever is
being
better.
Offered. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. And, yeah, again, we have a very different, like, situation. But I do, like, feel like I pride myself on, like, thinking about other people and trying to mm-hmm. reach out to hear about how other people are affected.
Yeah.
And for the restaurant industry, obviously, I was really close to it. So I know, like,
what that's looking like.
Yeah, what it's looking like there. But yeah. It's a fucking time, man. Like, honestly, it's hard to talk about. It's hard to think about. Like, if I actually think, like, sit down and think about it, like, excuse me. Like, if I actually.
Would you consider that cough dry or moist?
Oh, it was a fucking moist one. That's actually something else that I should say about my anxiety, is that it's really hard for me to go out in public, even not obviously non-essential, but like to the pharmacy and grocery stores and stuff, because I'm trying so hard not to clear my throat and not to cough. Dude, seriously, like it gives me so much anxiety because I don't want to make other people feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But it's like it truly is like what I have to do. And it's such a weird thing. That like it was before, because people always thought I was sick, but it's not like it is now. And I really try to be respectful about like making sure I'm just like swallowing as much as I can instead of like coughing it up. But damn, dude, that's like fucking crazy. Anyway, what was I going to say before that? Anyway, what I was going to say is like, it's hard for me to like sit down and actually think about like the huge like ramifications. And like, even yesterday I was going into the thoughts about like young children at this time, like if this goes on for too long, like because kids are exposed to like normal amounts of like bacteria and stuff like that in their adolescence, are kids potentially going to be growing up with like lesser immune systems because of it? Like, I literally was going down a freaking rabbit hole in my brain and I just feel the need.
Every right worst case scenario at once. Yeah. It's like a worst case scenario Sunday.
Yeah. And obviously like with my limited knowledge of like all of these things, because I'm not a doctor, I'm not a nurse, like I have no, you know what I mean? But just like from what I've ingested information wise. But I think that it's hard too, because like as somebody who struggled with like substance abuse and stuff like that, it's like the reason for that is like escapism. And it's easy to go back to like your escapism like route, like things like alcohol and stuff like that. And I've been seeing that a lot online, people drinking a lot and like kind of like normalizing drinking. And not that I'm trying to like sit here on my high horse being like, you shouldn't drink, but it is kind of like sad for me to see, because I know that people were like drinking a lot before, but I'm just kind of seeing this like send a shot, take a shot, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I am actually getting more DMs as well about people who are saying that they're like, things are going poorly for them and like trying to make a change, but while in isolation. And I'm so thankful that I'm at this point in my sobriety where it's like, I haven't been struggling with it, thankfully. Yeah. But I know that there's people who probably are in different points of their sobriety. And this is a huge hit for that, because like, if you can't do the things that you were normally doing for your escapism.
Well, and having your like regular support system as well around you. Yeah. Potentially.
Yeah. And like therapy and stuff like that. Like, that's extremely hard. And, you know, even for me with like the gym and stuff, which might sound so silly to some people, but like it really was like something that was helping me. Mm-hmm. Even in the beginning, like I was feeling so low and like so unmotivated and stuff like that.
Well, it's something else, right? Like it's just something to be filling your time.
Yeah. So. And when I was in my first like 2 or 3 months, what our therapist told me was that like boredom was like such a killer for addiction. And that's huge, right? Like sitting on the couch and you're like, well, I'm just sitting here anyway. I could be sitting here like buzzed, or, you know, smoking weed or whatever like your like vice or like path might be. I think that it's really easy to kind of lean on that, and it makes me like hurt for those people as well.
Yeah it's like such a tough situation again. Yeah. Like it is like really scary to think about that, and honestly also like going down like a rabbit hole again, it's just like, in the event that like anything happened to these people, it's like, would you be able to like get help as easily as well, kind of thing? Yeah. I don't know that you would right now.
Yeah.
Which is also scary.
Yeah. So anyway, hopefully we don't get into for like fear mongering. It's just honestly like honest thoughts that are coming to like my mind.
Well, and I think that again, it's like, you know, I think that a lot of people are having the same thoughts and like, you know, worrying about like the long-term effects and how it's going to impact them and their family and their friends and, you know, the world, like on like a massive scale, because like it's just this is huge. And I think it's way bigger than any of us could have seen from the beginning anyways as well. Because even when we did our podcast, not that I wasn't like taking it seriously or I didn't think it was important, but it was like, it felt so different at that point than it does now. Like, this feels like so dire and so intense and so like, holy fuck, like what are we gonna do, in comparison to like, you know, when there was 175,000 cases and we were like, holy shit, like this is a big deal.
That's so we didn't even
think about.
I feel the same way as we did when we made that podcast. I don't know what it was about me, but like you remember how obsessed I was with it.
I had a bad feeling.
Yeah, well, not even a bad feeling, but I just took it like, I was like, this is what's happening now. Like, it's not that I was trying to make it something that it wasn't, but I guess I did have a feeling. I was just like, this is a thing, and I need to get ahead of it.
Yeah, like, I think it didn't feel completely real to me yet, because even when we were recording that podcast, you know, like, our life was still, like, moderately normal. Like, our grocery stores were still pretty normal. Like, people were starting to, like, panic buy and stuff like that, but it was still, like, relatively normal. And then it's, like, every week that I went to the grocery store after that, there was like some new layer of something, like, okay, now you have to all stand outside of the store and wait to come in because there was only this many people allowed in at one time. And then there was like huge plexiglass between you and the cashier and just like, you know, there's always something different now every time I go, that it's really like unsettling. And for me, that's what kind of like solidifies like, oh, this is very real.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I noticed too from like when I was younger to now growing up and also like traveling and being in different places of the world, I noticed that like it's really hard for me to relate to like a lot of world events just because like we are so kind of like sheltered in Canada when it comes to like our politics and you know, the things that we deal with as like as a society generally speaking, and you know, like terrorism attacks and all of these kind of like crazy things that happen all over the world, it's like a lot of that isn't going on in Canada. So I felt like I always really struggled to relate to those things, and when I started traveling more, all of those things started to hit me. Like I went to New York for the first time and I was talking to a lot of the people there. I should say they were talking to me about it. I wasn't like, hey guys, what do you think about 9/11? But people were talking to me about how they were impacted by 9/11, and it felt so real to me so suddenly.
Right.
And same thing, I went to Paris like really shortly after the attack at the Bataclan, and I was staying right across the street from the Bataclan. And that was like a really unsettling experience for me as well, and just made it all very real. So I think talking about it and reading about it is like one thing for me, and I can obviously like empathize and be like, this is scary. Seeing it in person and like being around it and being like, oh, this is very different. Like that feels so much more. Like it just really like solidified things for me over the past couple weeks.
Yeah. It is true. Travel opens up your mind so much, and I think that we have like become desensitized to a lot of it. Like there's,
for sure,
you know, I'm not going to go into it because I don't have enough information on all of the horrific things that are going on in the world. But even, this is going back, but even in my grade 10 English class, my teacher had traveled around different areas and different continents and stuff. And she was helping in like impoverished and kind of like war-torn countries and stuff like that. And even like seeing the pictures that she was showing and like hearing her stories and stuff like that made me feel so much more for that than like, you know,
because you have a link now, like you have something that's like bringing you into it personally kind of thing.
Yeah. And it was crazy. Like I remember specifically after I had English one time, we came to drama, and I think I was talking to you about it, and I was just like so like distraught about it. I can't remember where it was, if she was talking about the genocide in Darfur or like what it was. It was something like specific, and I was just like, I can't believe this is happening, and like there's nothing that I'm doing about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, but like I wasn't doing anything about it before, but now it just felt like, it felt so real. And I think that like travel really does open your eyes to a lot of it, whereas like you said, we're kind of like generally speaking in a bubble over here in Canada, and especially in North America.
Well, and I think when you feel it's sort of like when you are ignorant to something, you're ignorant to it, and that's just really all it is. And like a lot of people aren't choosing to be ignorant, but it's sort of like when you're made aware of something, it's really hard not to like give yourself that call to action and be like, well, how am I not, I should be doing my part. And I think that's just human nature. Like as soon as we're like, oh, this is like the gravity of the situation, like this is what we're actually dealing with, and I can't pretend to like have my eyes closed on it anymore, I think that that's just like why we see so many people stepping up to the plate. And like I will just say, as like a positive kind of ending here, I think, you know, so when my brother had his car accident, anybody that's new, my oldest brother was in like a very like life-changing car accident. He has a brain injury. It was like a whole thing. The one positive thing that came out of that for me personally was that like I really got a chance to see like how much like our community was willing to step in. Like there was people like mowing our grass and making dinner for us and like, you know, just really going out of their way for our family, like offering to work at our store for free.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. And to me, it was like, I felt like, okay, like really cradled by this sense of community. And I do think that that's something that's really uplifting to see, is all of these people like jumping in how they can. Like I've seen a lot of different, are you crying?
Yeah. I was trying to pass it off like I wasn't.
Yeah. but you know, like I've seen a lot of different like Etsy sellers, like changing whatever they were doing before to like sew masks and send them to hospitals for free and stuff like that, and just people like shifting gears and being like, how can we help, you know? And I know that a lot of cosmetic factories, which actually this was kind of surprising to me, I don't know why, I think just because I feel like they're all pieces of shit, but like a lot of like the major like designer factories started making hand sanitizer instead of perfumes and stuff like that, and
a lot of breweries too.
Yeah. And like and I just think, to me, like that's really it is uplifting to see like humans just like stepping in and being like, yeah, okay, we're gonna just do what we can, because obviously this is scary and it's impacting everyone. And even if some of those things are, you know, like PR moves, or you're doing it to be considered an essential business or whatever, it's just like, it's still
helping.
It's still something, like it's still something to do with your hands, you know, like, and just be like, okay, like let's, what can be done here? So I think that is, you know, it's always uplifting to see people just like stepping in and providing in any way that they can.
Well, and that's the thing too, is like, we can step in and we can help, and we're doing that by like staying home.
Yeah.
And I think that a huge like thank you to the like our fellow like neighbor for doing that, if you're able to, right? Like, if obviously if you're an essential worker and stuff like that, again, a huge thank you. But I think with all of this talk about like, and focus about the protests and stuff like that, it's like, that's, it's very negative watching that. But what I haven't been highlighting in my own brain and my own mind is all of the people who are staying home and who are, you know,
The silent heroes.
Seriously, like they're sacrificing, they're making huge sacrifices so that they can, you know, like stop the spread of the virus. And and so a huge thank you goes out to everybody who is doing their part in that way. And then obviously like a huge thank you to healthcare workers and essential workers. And I mean, I even when I go to the grocery store, I often get the same guy at the grocery store, and it kind of like feels weird, but like I just kind of like shoot him like a glance of like a thank you, because I did read something on Reddit where a grocery store worker was like, it feels uncomfortable when people thank me, so I don't want to like specifically thank them but it's just like,
not trying to make you uncomfortable, but I love you.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, you are out here, and I know that like there's a lot of essential workers who aren't being properly compensated, which is like a huge other thing that I think is really important. But again, just like, it, I don't want anyone to think that it's not going unappreciative, like me sitting here in my home. Mm. It's like, I am so grateful, and I'm so grateful for like you staying at home, and, you know, other people in the world, like people who are like such close-knit families who don't live together, who aren't seeing each other. Like, that's a huge sacrifice.
Yeah.
And you're making it to like for the greater good, basically.
Well, and that's the thing, is like, you're not only looking out for yourself, but by doing so, you're looking out for everybody that you could potentially come in contact
exactly.
with. And that's like, I mean, really, you could say that you're saving thousands of lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good on you.
Yeah. So anyway, that's where we've been.
Yeah.
We've been doing that, playing Animal Crossing and just stressing in general.
Just catastrophizing as per.
No. But I do think to end this on a good note, I do think that we will come out of this. And I think that there has been like great tragedy and there will be great loss. But I see an end. Where is the end? I don't know, but I see an end in like a resurgence of like a new normal again.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for it, and I'm just like waiting.
What's basically. Your thing? Like, what are you gonna do when you get out?
I kept saying that I was just gonna go to the gym, but I don't know that that's true, because I think that it will be like a really slow integration back. But when things are like 100% back to normal, I'm gonna freaking crush it at the gym. And I'm going to get a goddamn massage.
Is that so much to ask?
Because my back is sore. And there's like, I didn't get massages that often before, but like, I am allocating.
You're due.
Yeah, I am allocating a serious hour to a deep tissue massage.
Yeah, fair enough.
What about you? What are you going
to
do?
Oh man, I'm so excited to go back to restaurants. That's like my shit.
Really?
Oh fuck, Alyssa. I can't even describe.
For me.
Dude, I just like, it is like truly one of like God's greatest gifts, the restaurant industry. I just like, I love eating out. I like getting to try like different types of food and stuff like that. And just like, food makes me so happy. And like, you can only eat so much of like home cooked meals, you know, and I'm so fucking sick of cleaning my kitchen.
Dude, see, that's my thing, is like, sorry to keep this going on for so goddamn long, but
let's really drag it out.
Yeah. But food makes me happy too, but I like making food, like cooking new food.
I don't mind cooking food, but like sometimes a bitch just wants to sit down.
Yeah.
You know, and be cooked for.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's how I feel.
It's probably because I was in the restaurant industry for so long that I'm like, yeah.
You're over it?
Yeah, I ate a lot of restaurant cooked food in my life.
I'm just not over it. Good. And now I'm going to appreciate it more than ever.
Yeah.
So, true. You know, and I also think traveling will be like kind of like a fun thing when we're allowed to do that again. Who knows when that'll be?
Yeah, who knows? But it would be nice to like sit on a beach.
Now that it's taketh away, I'm like,
you're ready to travel.
Oh, but I want to. I was like not like in the mood to travel at all before this, and now that I can't, I'm like, but
you want what you can have.
Why not?
Yeah, I want to change my answer, actually. Probably the beach if it's summer, which like that's a little optimistic. But if it's summer, I want to go to the beach. I love the beach.
She's going to go to the beach.
Yeah, I want to go swim in the, not the ocean really, but I want to swim in the lake.
I want to swim generally.
Eat cake by the ocean. That seems like a good place to end it.
Oh, I was like, what? I thought you were saying that it's like the beach is a good place to do something. And I was like, what are you getting at? What are you like? I was just saying like
eat cake by the ocean. And
yeah, that's like a really good ending.
It felt like we really went on and on.
That felt really natural, that ending for me. Oh, God. Anyway. All right, you guys. Thank you so much for joining us for another season.
And we will see you guys in the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm sweating, man.
Yeah, dude, it's hot up here. Woo.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.